Large residential centers. This chapter examines the government's policy to redevelop, rather than devolve, large residential centers, LRCs. 7.1. There are approximately 1,600 people with disability living in 9 government-operated and 22 non-government LRCs in New South Wales. 1. LRCs are residences that offer 24-hour assistance to 20 or more people with disabilities. There was debate during the inquiry about the value of such accommodation, and whether it complies with the New South Wales Disability Service Standards, the Disability Services ACT 1993, and whether person-centred services are able to be provided. 7.2. The government argued that LCRs can achieve the appropriate outcomes for certain groups, and therefore should be included in the mix of supported accommodation options. 2. Opponents of the facilities countered that LRCs impinge upon the rights of people with disability, do not comply with relevant standards and legislation, and should be abolished. 7.3. In 1998, the government announced it would devolve all LRCs over a 10-year period. 3. This process was to see large institutions in New South Wales closed, and residents housed in smaller community-based supported accommodation options in accordance with the Disability Services ACT 1993, the Act. 4. The Act aims to ensure that people with disability in New South Wales have the same basic rights as other members of the community. 5. 7.4. In 2006, the government revised this policy and announced that LRCs were to close over time, rather than by a specific date. 6. The revised approach to LRCs included the adoption of a wider range of accommodation and support models, including the redevelopment of some large institutions. 7. During parliamentary debate, the Honourable Peter Primrose, Minister for Disability Services, explained the government's approach. Under Stronger Together, the Kennedy government is pushing ahead with its plan to close large residential centres, some of which will be redeveloped to provide specialist support to people with complex needs who cannot live in other settings. 8. 7.5. During the inquiry, the New South Wales Ombudsman released a report on people with disabilities and the closure of large residential centres. In it, the Ombudsman reported that since 2006, 1 ADHC residential centre has closed, and 2 others are in the process of redevelopment. In June 2010, the Minister for Disability Services announced plans for the closure and redevelopment of another ADHC residential centre, to occur over 3 years. 9. 7.6. Ms. Julie Harrigan-Roos recommended that ADHC improve its practices in relation to the monitoring of LRCs and publicly disclose what actions it is taking to address the concerns raised in the June 2006 Ombudsman's report to Parliament. 10. 7.7. The facilities referred to in the Ombudsman report are the Pitt Island Centre, the Lachlan Centre, the Riverside Centre and the Grosvenor Centre. The redevelopment plans for each facility is as follows. Redeveloped large residential centres in New South Wales. Centre. Redevelopment plans / new accommodation. Pitt Island Centre. The centre will close in late 2010, and be redeveloped at 2 different sites. The site at Hamlin Terrace will host an aged care village for 100 people, and the site in Woodalda will have 4 5-bedroom houses. 11. Lachlan Centre. The centre will close in late 2010, and be redeveloped at a different location on the same site. The new facilities will have 10 5-bedroom houses designed as specialist services for people with challenging behaviour. 12. Riverside Centre. Funds to redevelop the centre were announced in 2010 to 2011 budget. The centre will be replaced by a specialist-supported living cluster on site for people with challenging behaviour. 5. Community-based houses for people with additional care needs, located close to the cluster, and 40 houses across the western region for people not requiring specialist support. 13. Grosvenor Centre. The centre closed in January 2009, and has been redeveloped on site. The new accommodation has 2 10-bedroom houses designed as specialist support for people with complex health needs. 14. 7.8. Ms. Julie Horian-Roos recommended that ADHC improve its practices in relation to the monitoring of LRCs and publicly disclose what actions it is taking to address the concerns raised in the June 2006 Ombudsman's report to Parliament. 15. 7.9. The size and scope of LRCs vary greatly. For example, the government-operated facility at Stockton houses approximately 450 people, while other small facilities accommodate only 20 people. 16.7.10. In September 2010, Minister Primrose assured Parliament the accommodation services would comply with the Act, including access to advocacy services. 17. When questioned on the planned timeframe of these projects, Minister Primrose said, "This is not something that can be done precipitously or according to a rigid timetable. We are talking about the lives of 1,350 people, many of whom have lived in these residences for many decades, and who have formed strong relationships there. Residents must be at the center of these service developments. Planning is occurring in close consultation with every resident and his or her family or guardian. We are ensuring that residents and their families are treated with respect and care. This process involves a major undertaking with large financial implications. In recurrent dollars alone, we are talking about $200 million to support these clients, and capital solutions will cost in the vicinity of $500 million. 18.7.11. It is important to note that discussion during the inquiry centered on the devolution of LRCs for people with disabilities as opposed to those with mental health issues. Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer at NCOS, provided a definition of this group. "We are talking about people whose primary disability is physical, intellectual, cognitive, sensory, brain injury, and dementia, not people whose primary disability is mental health. We are not talking about mental health patients, although we must identify that many people with disabilities have a comorbidity with mental health issues." 19.7.12. The evidence provided to the committee was divided, with a small number of participants in support of the current redevelopment policy and the majority of participants opposed. Both arguments are presented in the following sections. Support for LRCs. 7.13. During the inquiry, the government defended its decision to redevelop rather than close certain centres. Mr. Moore stated he had redevelopment phrases saying that not in all instances will a large residence be closed and replaced by small community-based housing, which is what the word devolution was meant to imply. Redevelopment embeds the concept that you have to have horses for courses. 20.7.14. Mr. Moore expanded on this argument, telling the committee that increasing the mix of accommodation options available to people with disability better caters to individual needs. It made no sense to say 2,000 beds need to be built in the community. Why? Because we have 2,000 beds in large residential centers, so that is what we will do. You have got to chunk it down and deal with smart decisions about individual facilities with a view to what do you want to see across the totality of New South Wales. Capacity. You know you are going to need some forensic units, some aged care facilities, lots of community housing, and our challenge is to try and get away from even the community housing model, because I think there are a significant number of clients that we have already in the facilities that we operate, and, more importantly, some of the people who are going to need some form of supported accommodation that are not about 24-hour, 7-day-per-week life supervision. The labels we are using are things like drop-in support, but there are people who need to be in some proximity to paid workers who can visit them from to time, and if they need to, they can have a lot more help put in at a particular time for a week or a month, or whatever, but not have the concept that there is a 24-hour, 7-day-per-week all-year-long staff arrangement around you. 21.7.15. The government maintained that the redevelopment of LRCs best served the interests of certain client groups. Mr. Moore said that the recent redevelopment of the Grosvenor Centre assists individuals with high support needs by providing a more conducive work environment for nursing staff. What we are trying to do with the replacement to the Grosvenor Centre is to provide a facility that has high quality medical and quasi-medical care. You need a certain body of nursing staff, and you cannot run that out of group homes. People say you can, if you spend enough money. Well, you can spend all the money alike, and you'll not get enough qualified nurses to run it out of an environment where you have completely separated one facility from another. They need supervision and they need networking among themselves to work effectively. We know that we need to provide high quality nursing care, to be able to provide the basis for a quality of life outcome for individuals. 22.7.16. Mr. Moore suggested that the aging population and higher life expectancy of people with disability further supports the need for LRCs, because it is proving particularly difficult to get these individuals access to residential aged care centers. 23.7.17. The committee was informed that ADHC is currently undertaking an aging in place project, which examines older residents in large institutions and group homes. Mr. Mike Blaszczyk, general manager of McCall Gardens Community Limited and member of Futures Alliance, said that ADHC has been working with 14 NGOs for the past 6 months to evaluate the best kind of accommodation support arrangements for older people living in LRCs. 24.7.18. Harraquad, New South Wales. Harraquad is currently in the process of redeveloping Ferguson Lodge, an LRC in Lidcombe. Mr. Maximum Bisotti, Chief Executive Officer of Harraquad, supported the government's stance on offering clients a greater range of accommodation options. "It is quite clear from our experience that there is a variety of accommodation models that will suit. Certainly we have a facility that can cater for up to 40 people. Some of the residents of that facility have lived in group homes and prefer to live in a congregate facility. There is a range of options that we are looking at." 25.7.19. Mr. Bisotti stressed that providing LRC-style accommodation offered greater choice to clients. "There are a number of models that will suit quite a range of individuals. It is that choice which is one of the main things that our organization tries to provide to our membership and the wider community. That is what it is all about. I think that there are a number of models that need to be deployed to give people those different choices." 26.7.20. Harraquad also contended that LRCs provided acceptable accommodation to particular client groups. Ms. Tonina Harvey, General Manager, Community Services at Harraquad, noted that Harraquad's redevelopment plan for Ferguson Lodge will cater to the high care needs of their clients. 27.7.21. Certain advocacy groups supported the argument that specific groups may benefit from congregate care. The Disability Trust noted that its experience has shown congregate care can be appropriate in some circumstances. "We have seen some people build very real relationships within environments such as licensed residentials, and after many years of living in these surroundings, some clients may not choose an option to relocate even if available. We have seen this expression of choice amongst people with physical disabilities over recent years, and it also needs to be respected. Where people are aging, congregate care is also acceptable within the wider community, and there is no reason why this shouldn't also therefore be an option for people with a disability." 28.7.22. Alternatively, PWD noted that while the current approach to redeveloping LRCs may cater to the needs of certain groups, it fails to offer appropriate levels of choice. 29.7.23. It was also suggested that LRCs may be capable of providing the same outcomes for people with disability as community-based supported accommodation. ADHC claimed that moving people from institutions into smaller, supported accommodation placements failed to recognize that group homes are not averse to becoming institutionalized. Mr. Moore explained this position. "By mid-2005, there was an extensive process of revisiting the policy settings around accommodation, not just around large residences but more generally, which brought to the discussion a concept that it was not just about bricks and mortar, and that you do not address an issue by changing the bricks and mortar. That works both in relation to large spaces, large numbers of people being accommodated together, and to small spaces. There is nothing inherent in the way in which a group home could operate, a group home with 5 or 6 people with a disability, that would prevent it from being institutionalized and having poor institutionalized outcomes." 37.24. Ms. Harvey agreed with this suggestion, noting that the model of care is really about where institutionalization can determine how people's lives will progress. "What we need to ensure is that there are good programs around social inclusion and community participation which are streamed through any model of service delivery, regardless of the setting." 31. Opposition to LRCs. 7.25. Although ADHC support the position to redevelop LRCs, the agency acknowledged that there can be problems with larger accommodation facilities. Mr. Moore told the committee that there are certain inherent limitations to community engagement that can occur in larger facilities, However, the government is moving to overcome these barriers. 32.7.26. Additionally, Paraquat acknowledged that social inclusion can be difficult for residents of LRCs. To overcome this problem, Mr. Basotti said that the redevelopment plans for Ferguson Lodge allow residents to participate in the community more thoroughly than traditional institutions. That is one of the big points about the redevelopment of Ferguson Lodge. It is at the old Lidcombe Hospital site, and it is surrounded by the TAFE University. The rest of the site is being developed by Australand into a residential facility, so that in fact the community is coming to Ferguson Lodge. The residents of Ferguson Lodge feel that they will well and truly be integrated into the community. They have access to public transport, good facilities, and they are free to come and go. 33.7.27. There was vehement opposition to the redevelopment of large institutions by some inquiry participants. Discussion on the issue focused on whether redeveloping these sites impedes on the rights of people with disability, and if LRCs conform to the requirements of the Act. 7.28. Opponents of the use of LRCs clarified the definition of institutionalized care. Ms. Des Sands, Executive Director of People with Disability Australia, said that institutional accommodation congregates, segregates, and isolates people with disability. Therefore, LRCs and other forms of supported accommodation, such as cluster housing and villas, are considered institutionalized care. 34.7.29. People with disability admonished the government for failing to close institutional accommodation, particularly LRCs, and was frustrated by the number of people still living outside of the mainstream community. We have not come very far in shifting to inclusive forms of accommodation, where people genuinely live in the community and are able to be included in a different way than if they are living with their peers in an isolated environment. That is quite different from being able to live in the community. 35.7.30. Many inquiry participants were frustrated, disappointed and perplexed about the government's change in policy position. Mr. LeBreton, Chief Executive Officer of Disability Enterprises, contended that a number of factors could have contributed to the policy change. I guess it would be a little bit too reductionist to just say it is a lack of leadership. I think it is a few things. Obviously, we need money put into that, but also it needs to be driven with commitment, because it is an area where it is very easy to present issues that are not necessarily real, but can create great fear in the eyes of parents and the community. It is very, very easy to politicize it. It is very easy to do that. I think the other big issue here too, of course, is that there is a strong self-interest within the staffing ranks for the status quo. 36.7.31. The New South Wales CID suggested that the government may have shied away from its previous commitment because of concerns voiced by certain element of the community, and for economic reasons. 37. In some communities where institutions are located, families may have expressed reluctance or concerns about their family members being moved into more community-based settings. That is certainly the international experience. A lot of research has been done on this issue. At first, families feel concerned and nervous about their loved ones, but with the experience of devolution they become quite robust supporters of the process. Presumably the government is mindful of the reservations in some communities. I imagine that there is some economic reasoning behind it. 38.7.32. It was claimed that LRCs fail to meet Commonwealth obligations under the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. The New South Wales Ombudsman damningly found that the fundamental human rights of residents in LRCs are currently not being met, particularly the right and opportunity to communicate with others and make decisions and choices, the right to participate in the community and to develop social networks, and the right to develop skills to increase independence. 39.7.33. Some inquiry stakeholders were adamant that the redevelopment of LRCs contravened the provisions of the Act. The New South Wales Ombudsman also found that LRCs failed to conform to the Act, as LRC service users received services in a way that restricted their rights and opportunities, do not have access to advocacy support where appropriate, had lives that were very different to those valued in the mainstream community, and had most, or all, aspects of their lives controlled by one service. 47.34. People with disability expressed similar frustrations, noting that the government's policy does not meet international and state responsibilities. Our concern is based on the objects of the Disability Services Act, as well as the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which outlines that people with disability should be able to be included in the community, and live independently, and have the same and equal choices as other people. People with disability, who have historically been congregated together, and isolated in that way, because that is the only way they can receive a service. It is not a choice being made. It is actually to receive a service through the service system. 41.7.35. The ability of LRCs to provide the appropriate environment for people with disabilities to successfully achieve their personal outcomes and to live a good life. Questioned during the inquiry, McCoss elucidated this concern, claiming that research proves that LRCs do not adequately meet the needs of residents. McCoss is concerned at the redevelopment of traditional institutions into smaller disability villages which are still segregated from the local community, have shared staff, and still operate on group rules, rather than the needs of the individual person. Australian and overseas research has consistently demonstrated that the outcomes for people who live in these village situations more closely reflect the outcomes of people in large disability institutions, rather than the outcomes of people with disability, who are integrated into dispersed housing in the community. 42.7.36. Similarly, Ms. Carol Berry, executive officer of the New South Wales CID, was disappointed that LRCs continue to accommodate people with disability because of the negative repercussions they have on their individual outcomes. Where larger groups of people are living together in one setting, there is an inevitable compromise with regard to the individual outcomes that can be achieved. That point was emphasized in New South Wales Ombudsman's report released in 2009, which looked specifically at individual planning and outcomes that could be achieved in ADHC-operated large residential centres. That was a comprehensive report, and its conclusions were clear that the model could not deliver for individuals. That is a problem. 43.7.37. Mr. Lebreton has worked in the disability services sector for a number of years, and told the committee of his recent experience visiting a former client who lives in a LRC. 6 months ago I went back to what was called a ward in those days where I first started. When I walked into a room that had a courtyard off it, I saw a woman. I said to the staff member, "Is that Michelle?" I will not say her surname, and I was told yes, it is. She is in exactly the same place that she was 36 years ago. When I was there she was 8 years old, so you can imagine how long ago that is. She was a ragdoll type of child with no challenge or behavioral problem to anyone, not a child that would make you think how are we going to provide a service for her. She is now a woman in a wheelchair. I think of what a whole lot of other people with disabilities with whom I have worked over the many years have done, and I just despair for her that she is in this aging large institution, and she is still there in exactly the same place. 44.7.38. Mr. Lebreton said his experience highlighted the failure of LRCs to meet the individual outcomes of people with disability. 45.7.39. It was noted that people with disabilities residing in LRCs often exhibit poor behavior. PWD claimed that the behavior of residents can be attributed to their living conditions. There is evidence to show that isolation, congregation, and segregation for the purposes of providing a service do not allow a person to develop skills to their maximum ability. In fact, they may develop behaviors that are quite negative, but which are called challenging behavior. Those behaviors change when they are in more appropriate settings, and the capacity of people and their ability to function changes when they are in different settings. 46.7.40. Inquiry participants expressed concern that LRCs perpetuate negative ideas about people with disabilities. The Disability Trust said that LRCs create a stigma toward people with disability and negate their inclusion in mainstream society. 47.7.41. The committee received evidence that it is more cost-effective to house people with disability in smaller residences rather than LRCs. New South Wales CID reported that the government spends significantly more on housing people in LRCs rather than providing supports in their own homes or smaller community settings. 48.7.42. Mr. Lebreton was unable to provide a cost comparison between running the Greystanes Children's Home and the supported accommodation provided by his organisation, Disability Enterprises. 49. Mr. Lebreton did concede that it is substantially cheaper for an NGO to operate supported accommodation facilities for people with high medical needs, because they are not bound to pay their staff the same award rate as ADHC. 50.7.43. A number of inquiry participants continue to lobby the government to reverse its redevelopment policy and to close LRCs. It was suggested that current residents be moved into supported accommodation accommodation within community living settings. 7.44. In its recent report, the New South Wales Ombudsman stated that, although ADHC has improved at practice and service delivery in LRCs, this model of care fails to allow residents to fully exercise individual choice and participate as full members of the community, thus should not continue to be used. The report recommended ADHC move towards devolution and should continue to report to the Ombudsman's office until devolution occurs. 51.7.45. Ms. Regan explained that people with disability currently residing in LRCs are capable of living in the community if they are afforded the appropriate supports and trained staff. 52. Thus, MCOS recommended that ADHC recommits to closing all disability institutions in favour of person-centred small, community-based, dispersed responses to supported accommodation for people with disability. 53.7.46. People with disability highlighted the benefits of supporting people with disability to live in the community, noting that its current president grew up in an institution and has been living independently for the past 15 years. 54.7.47. Inquiry participants acknowledged that the process of closing LRCs would be difficult, but considered the outcomes worthwhile. Mr. Lebreton gave the committee a vivid personal account of working within an LRC during the time it devolved its operations into smaller supported accommodation facilities. I asked them how they, parents of the residents, felt when Greystanes was told it was closing. Overwhelmingly, every one of them said, "We were horrified, we were terrified, and we were scared. We objected to it." On two occasions, two parents said to me in slightly different words that had the same meaning, "If only we had known how much better it would have been for our sons and our daughters, it would have saved us a lot of angst, and we could have put a lot more energy into doing what we really needed to do for our sons and daughters." They talked about how their sons and daughters now have their own private space. They live alongside ordinary neighbors in ordinary houses on ordinary streets. 55.7.48. Mr. Lebreton continued, "The point that I would like to emphasize is that they are living in ordinary houses and not in specially built facilities or purpose-built facilities, which is the term used by the department. These are ordinary houses in ordinary streets alongside ordinary neighbors. These people have high support needs and high and complicated medical needs, and they are used to having nurses all around them. However, they now live in ordinary houses that are appropriately equipped and appropriately accessible." 56.7.49. Additionally, Mr. Lebreton impressed upon the committee his belief that smaller accommodation settings allow families and people with disabilities to have greater control and authority over their short and long-term goals. 57.7.50. The New South Wales CID takes the initial concept of devolution further, suggesting that people with disability should be free to live in whatever way they like. "We feel that ideally people should be supported to live in whatever arrangement they feel is appropriate, just as the rest of us have that right. Most of us do not put our hand up to live with large groups, but with a partner, siblings or a friend or two friends. That is the ideal model. People with a disability should have the right to choose who they live with and under what circumstances." 58.7.51. It was noted that closing LRCs would bring New South Wales in line with other jurisdictions. Ms. Berry said that closing these facilities would align with international trends. "There has been an international trend to move from congregate settings for people with a disability to smaller, more individual settings. There is a recognition that grouping people together, just because they have a disability, and housing them in one location is not perhaps the best outcome, and that from a fundamental rights perspective we should be shifting towards more individualized outcomes. We are not talking about units, but people with real needs and a real right to be able to engage in community life. That is the broad debate." 59.7.52. Likewise, Mr. Philip French, director of the Disability Discrimination Legal Centre, was quoted in the media as saying that New South Wales is the only place in the developed world that is rebuilding institutions contrary to international law. 60.7.53. Other Australian jurisdictions have moved towards devolution as initially described by the New South Wales government. The committee was informed that Victoria had almost closed of all its facilities, and that Western Australia has had a model of local area coordination for some years. 61.7.54. Ms. Julie Horian-Ruse recommended that ADHC improve its practices in relation to the monitoring of LICs and publicly disclose what actions it is taking to address the concerns raised in the June 2006 Ombudsman's Report to Parliament 62, Committee Comment 7.55. The committee is shocked and concerned to learn that approximately 1,600 people with disability currently live in LRCs. The committee received overwhelming evidence regarding the problems with LRCs. LRCs can exclude people with disability from the community. Additionally, LRCs do not provide adequate opportunities for people with disabilities to meet individual outcomes. 7.56. LRCs fail to meet international and state obligations regarding people with disabilities exercising their rights and responsibilities as citizens. 7.57. The committee acknowledges the view that LRCs are required to ensure that there is an appropriate mix of accommodation for people with disabilities, particularly for individuals with high support needs. However, the evidence presented to the committee strongly illustrates that these people can live in small community-based residences if appropriately supported. The experience of residents in Disability Enterprises' new accommodation is an excellent example of how people with high support needs can live in small community settings. 7.58. The committee agrees with the government that small community-based accommodation settings can also become institutionalized. While this may be the case, the evidence presented overwhelmingly demonstrated that the inherent characteristics of LRCs, such as their delivery of services and the level of control over residents' lives, make LRCs more susceptible to such a condition. 7.59. The committee acknowledges that redeveloping LRCs may continue to exclude people with disabilities from the community. As discussed by the proponents of devolution, housing people with disabilities in facilities that are distinct from their immediate surrounds does not encourage interaction with mainstream society and perpetuates the stigma of disability. This situation is unacceptable, and people with disability deserve to have choice, flexibility, person-centered planning and have their services provided in community setting if they choose. 7.60. The committee accepts that international and Australian research has found that people with disability reach their outcomes more readily in small, community-based supported accommodation facilities rather than LRCs. Supporting and encouraging people with disabilities to meet their full potential is an important part of their social and emotional development. 7.61. The committee commends the findings and recommendations of the recent New South Wales Ombudsman's report, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres. This report clearly elucidates the difficulties people with disabilities face when housed in LRCs. It also noted the community's disappointment at the failure of the government to achieve their original policy to close these facilities by 2010. 7.62. On the balance of evidence received during the inquiry, the committee recommends that the Minister for Disability Services maximise the devolution of large residential centre through providing person-centred planning and support for every service user who is currently housed in these centres. The committee believes that if every service user received person-centered planning, a very small number who had extremely high support needs may remain in congregate settings such as LRCs. 7.63. Additionally, the committee recommends that the Minister for Disability Services ensures that service users who are transitioned out of large residential centres are adequately supported during the transition period and while they settle into their new accommodation. Recommendation 1. That the Minister for Disability Services maximise the devolution of large residential centre through providing person-centred planning and support for every service user who is currently housed in these centres. That the accommodation needs and preferences of individuals are the centre of decisions to relocate residents. That all accommodation options offered to service users transitioning out of large residential centres complies with the New South Wales Disability Service Standards, Disability Services ACT 1993 and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Recommendation 2. That the Minister for Disability Services ensures that service users who are transitioned out of large residential centres are adequately supported during the transition period and while they settle into their new accommodation. 1. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres. August 2010, P1 2. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7 3. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 4. Angord, August 2004, accessed the 20th of October 2010. http://www.lawlink.ns.gov.au/lawlink/opg/ll_opg.nsf/v/files/august%20004.pdf/$file/august%20004.pdf5. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P5 6. Department of Ageing, Disability and Home Care, Stronger Together, A New Direction for Disability Services in NSW 2006-2016, P7 7. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 8. NSWPD, Legislative Council, the 22nd of June 2010, P24378-9. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 10. Submission 81, Ms. Julie Harrigan-Roos, Homeless Persons Legal Service, P4 11. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 12. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 13. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 14. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, P1 15. Submission 81, Ms. Julie Harrigan-Roos, Homeless Persons Legal Service, P4 16. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Officer, New South Wales Council on Intellectual Disability, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, P15 17. NSWPD, Legislative Council, the 7th of September 2010, P25231 18. NSWPD, Legislative Council, the 7th of September 2010, P25231 19. Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P58 20. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7 21. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7 22. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7 23. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7 24. Mr. Mike Blaszczyk, Futures Alliance Member and General Manager, McCall Gardens Community Limited, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P44. 25. Mr. Maximum Bassotti, Chief Executive Officer, Paraquad New South Wales, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P6. 26. Mr. Bassotti, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P6. 27. Ms. Tonina Harvey, General Manager, Community Services, Paraquad New South Wales, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P6. 28. Answers to questions on notice, Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer, The Disability Trust, the 3rd of September 2010, P5. 29. Ms. Denise Beckwith, Acting Manager, Individual Advocacy, People with Disability Australia, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P34. 30. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7. 31. Ms. Harvey, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P7. 32. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P7. 33. Mr. Bassotti, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P7. 34. Mrs. Sands, Executive Director, People with Disability Australia, Evidence, 3 September 2010, p. 34. 35. Ms. Sands, Evidence, 3 September 2010, p. 34. 36. Mr. John Le Breton, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Enterprises, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 4. 37. Ms. Berry, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 16. 38. Ms. Berry, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 16. 39. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, p. 5. 40. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, p. 5. 41. Ms. Sands, Evidence, 3 September 2010, p. 35. 42. Answers to Questions on Notice, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, 9 August 2010, p. 3. 43. Ms. Berry, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 15. 44. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September, 2010, p. 3. 45. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September, 2010, p. 3. 46. Ms. Sands, Evidence, 3 September 2010, p. 35. 47. Answers to Questions on Notice, Ms. Bowen, 3 September 2010, p. 5. 48. Submission No. 39, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, p. 6. 49. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September, 2010, p. 8. 50. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September, 2010, p. 8. 51. New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Large Residential Centres, August 2010, p. 5 to 6. 52. Ms. Regan, Evidence, 9 August 2010, p. 58. 53. Submission 30. Ms. Christine Regan, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, p. 13. 54. Ms. Sands, Evidence, 3 September 2010, p. 35. 55. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 1. 56. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 1. 57. Mr. Le Breton, Evidence, 27 September 2010, p. 4. 58. Ms. Berry, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 16. 59. Ms. Berry, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 16. 60. Horan, A. Empty Promises of Freedom, Sydney Morning Herald, October 9, 2010. 61. Ms. Berry, Evidence, 26 August 2010, p. 16. 62. Submission 81. Ms. Julie Harrigan-Ruse, Homeless Persons Legal Service, p. 4.